This is Nick Bull today on Cards Subject to Change. CZ and I, we're diving deep into Fall Brawl 97. We'll also touch on the things that caught our attention this past week. We are brought to you by the For Frequency Sake Podcast Network. You can subscribe to the For Frequency Sake on your favorite podcast platform for the newest episodes of Educated Ignorance, The Data Lab, Cards Subject to Change, and other great podcast content.
Hello, welcome to Cards Subject to Change. With me, as you just heard, my tag team partner, the Honorable Nick Bull. I am the Wizard CZ. Nick, how's it going today?
Oh, it's going great. It's going great. I mean, anytime you can get on here and talk wrestling and you can celebrate your NFL team winning, it's a great thing. So it's a good day.
Hey, I'd say that sounds like a great day. I'm not a big football guy myself. My main sport is wrestling. Which some people only loosely consider it a sport, which I understand, but having a big win on the gridiron, that's got to make you feel pretty good.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
So, Nick, I think we're going to have a pretty fun time today. Looking at this card compared to last week, night and day, comparatively.
that's the understatement of the show so far. We're not even 2 minutes in, and that's the understatement. Yeah. This was much more that had its place, but this show is much more enjoyable to watch.
Absolutely. And, you know, before we get into Fall Brawl 97, I think we got to touch on some main roster, some current product stuff here. Honestly, I want to talk about NXT. They're really coming back into their own, I think. One of the best matches of the week happened to be on NXT. How often, Nick, do we see a tag team cage match?
Not too often, and you know, and how often do we see a tag team cage match that delivered like this one? I mean, tag team wrestling is alive and well, and this feud is something to watch over the years. I'm talking about the Creed brothers, and I'm talking about Pretty Deadly. I love this matchup. It's the hardworking brutes against the English pretty boys. You know, it's a good dynamic. These four guys really brought it as the opener. I would hate to have followed this match as any other performer on the show because this match was nuts. I was told about it. I did not watch it live. Went back and watched it later that night and was told, Bull, you got to see this. You are going to absolutely love it. And then the person wasn't wrong. If you love tag team wrestling, you love physicality. This match delivered, and we got it on free TV.
And I haven't watched NXT live as it airs in probably 3 months. I went back and watched this, too. I watched the whole show, actually. I'll give an honorable mention to the main event with Solo Sikoa and Carmelo Hayes. Carmelo Hayes is definitely someone to watch out for, but so are the Creed brothers, so are Pretty Deadly. This tag team match really hit home. And arguably could have swapped and been in this main event slot, but I understand their reasoning wanting the Solo Sikoa win of the North American Championship to end the show.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. No, I'm not telling them that they had this match in the wrong place, but man, this match was, in my opinion, the match of the night, and you got it as the opener for free. So I was just kind of stating where it was in the card. Yeah, the Carmelo and Solo Sikoa match was good. Had to be there for the storytelling. Of course, with the bloodline angle, but yeah, the tag team match opening was phenomenal. And, you know, not only this tag team match, we also get a little tease at the end of the show.
Yeah, that's
are the black and gold, black and gold coming back.
Yeah, I think that's great. The change of the logo, taking away that 2.0 and going to a yellow, gold, and black logo, you've got to expect that they're going back to the black and gold days of NXT, or maybe a white and gold so to bring something new to the table. And rumor has it, you know, for the last year, we have not heard the word takeover on an NXT event. Rumor has it that Triple H is pushing to bring the word takeover back into their events, their premium live events.
Yes. I'm not sure. I'm agreeing with all you said. I was taking all that in about the premium live events and the bringing TakeOver back. I guess when will be the first show of NXT? When's their next big show? I'm not talking on TV. When's their next? Would it be a Royal Rumble? Would it be in January?
No, because if they're going by tradition, their next big event would be War Games. So it'd be end of November.
That's right.
Or beginning of December.
Interesting. Okay, well,
I almost wish we had talked about them last and brought that. That'd be a good segue into Fall Brawl.
That would have been a good segue, but no. There's no need for segue on this show. I mean, there's not really much of a format if you're following along.
That's very true. The only format that I stick to, we'll try and keep to, if we're discussing a nostalgia card or a current product card, we try and stick to the card order, obviously, but otherwise, the format tends to go right out the window.
Oh, yeah. There is some order when it comes to reviewing shows. You got to go match by match, you know. You just have to. You can't start at the end. You go to the beginning, and what's the worst, right? You don't start counting down to one.
Right, exactly. So a couple of other pieces of business. We here at Card Subject to Change, we are not going to acknowledge the controversy in AEW. Until it's all played out, then we may talk about it down the road. But we are going to talk about the title picture in AEW, which you had two really decent matches, arguably really good matches, on free TV on Wednesday as well. You had Sammy Guevara and Jon Moxley. You had Chris Jericho and Bryan Danielson for another go. Both of those matches were solid, and both of those are building the title picture, which later this week on Wednesday, we will find out who the new AEW champion is. What did you think of AEW this week, Nick?
Well, I thought it was a real good show. I did not see it live, but I did watch it later that night. It was solid. I'm hearing they pulled a 1.8 rating, which would be their highest viewing ever. And I guess you consider that the go home to Grand Slam. Grand Slam is totally loaded. Rampage Grand Slam is totally loaded. I feel Tony and company are doing all they can to give back to the fans for this incident. We are getting rewarded with this bracket, and we're going to get rewarded with the championship.
Yeah.
Mox and Ryan. I mean, Mox and Danielson. This started back at Revolution this year. This is when we got Regal into AEW after his NXT release, and he came out and broke up these two fighting, shook hands, and kind of started the Blackpool Combat Club. So this is kind of, you know, where the story ends and begins again. Now, who's going to win? I have no idea. I could see arguments for both guys.
I can too. But
it is going to be crazy on Wednesday night. Crowd will be nuts for sure, and that'll play a big part in the show.
And here's the fun thing. I want to talk a little bit about the main event, but the fun thing is if Danielson wins, this will be the third decade in a row where CM Punk has been ousted or left a company and Danielson has come into his own as a champion. Three decades in a row. You've got ROH, you've got WWE, and if he wins on Wednesday, you've got AEW.
Maybe it's written in the stars. I don't know. Maybe that's the case. I don't know. That's a pretty good stat. I think that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
But the groundwork's been laid. They've told some good stories here. Moxley has gotten a little cleaner in the ring. Do you notice he hasn't been blading at all, right?
Yeah, I think that's great.
I think fans are coming are coming around on him, that he's cleaning up his work and he can be taken seriously when he's working like this and putting on good matches instead of the sloppy, bloody deathmatch type matches. But I digress. I am looking forward to Wednesday night. I'm leaning towards Moxley winning personally, but I'll be surprised either way, I'm sure.
It's going to be a hell of a match. And if Danielson versus Jericho is any testament to how hard hitting it's going to be, Jericho walked away with that from that match. His chest was completely purple after Danielson just chopped the hell out of him.
And I remember you telling me that. I remember you telling me that when I was watching it. And then I watched Rampage on Friday, of course, which is taped right after that match. And he's on commentary, and his chest is just still purple. He doesn't say a word about it. He's not selling it. But, yeah, you could tell it is killing him.
Yeah, what a kudos to Jericho for putting up with that and still continuing on in commentary for the taped broadcast of Rampage after Dynamite went off the air.
For sure. He's a pro's pro, man.
And, of course, that's going to bring us to our final main roster or current roster topic. Yesterday there was a big press conference in Las Vegas. Triple H introducing the challengers, the two men who will be facing each other at Crown Jewel in the main event in the WWE Undisputed Universal Heavyweight Championship match. You're going to have Roman Reigns defending against Logan Paul. And Paul is only in this will be his third match in the WWE, and already he's in the title picture.
You know what? That doesn't bother me. I think Triple H sees what can be done here, and this is going to get a lot of clicks, a lot of eyes, and it's not like they're throwing David Arquette out there. Logan Paul has been on two of the biggest stages that the WWE can offer and has performed well. Granted, he is in there with good workers. Well, he'd be working with one of the best wrestlers in the world and working with Roman. And amongst, you know, having Heyman there at ringside, I think this is it's a smart move. This is a lull right now in the WWE calendar, if you think about it.
Yeah.
There's a lull right now. The Monday Night Football has kicked in. Football is going on, so you're losing some viewers. This is a way to get some of those viewers back. And this is a way to get people to watch Crown Jewel, which I thought last year's Crown Jewel was an excellent show. And we know Triple H is in control now. So each pay-per-view is his own. So everything's been on the upswing with Triple H in control. I like this decision. I think it's going to be an excellent match. I think people are going to be talking about this one for a while. I see Roman retaining. I don't see Logan Paul pulling an upset. I don't see Triple H going that route, but it's going to be a hell of a contest.
Yeah, and I'm really looking forward to Crown Jewel. I don't usually look forward to the Saudi events because let's face facts, they've been hit and miss over the years. Super Showdown in the last couple of years has been, I think the last one was in 2020. I watched that recently. And your two title matches are squash matches. The Fiend got just completely devastated by Goldberg. You put Ricochet in against Brock Lesnar. And, you know, I'm sorry, we talk about suspending disbelief. There's no way that I could suspend disbelief to see Ricochet beating Brock Lesnar. I love Ricochet to death. That's not a knock on him. That's a knock on the booking because maybe they didn't have anybody else who could have held his own against Lesnar, but that's neither here nor there. We're not talking about that show. We probably won't talk about that show unless we get desperately bored for some garbage wrestling to talk about. But yeah, this is a Saudi show that I'm actually looking forward to, and that was my point there.
Yeah, for sure, it's on the horizon, and they've got their main event. They've got the poster out there. I will be interested to see who else gets put on this show, how big of a show they're going to do. And how much of it will be filler? You know, how much is it going to be advancing the storylines, and how much will be filler? Remains to be seen, but I already like the main event, so they've got me already.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think it'll be interesting to see where Triple H takes it. I mean, like I said, Saudi's been hit and miss with their cards, but with Triple H having the reins, I don't think it'll be a bad show. I don't think we're going to see many bad shows for a while, honestly, with Triple H at the helm.
I don't either. You know, unless they can fix Raw going to 2 hours, it'd be great. But no, they're going to have the 3-hour Raw. But the shows have been good. They may not have been the highest rated, but it's above and beyond what it has been for years. So it's in the positive direction. And Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. I was just going to say the only thing that I would fix about Monday Night Raw. Yeah. 3 hours is a long time for a non pay-per-view or premium live event. But the thing that they're struggling with the most, I think they really need to have a title there, and they need to either break off the title, one of the titles from Roman, or create a new championship for Raw, because I think that's their weakest point right now.
I don't know how they do it, but I'm looking forward to how they do it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. But I think at this point, Nick, let's... Let's head in our time machine and go back 25 years.
Yeah, there's only one way to get into a swimming pool, Phoebe, and it's not by the stairs. You just dive in head first, and we're ready exactly. to jump into the time machine, dial it back. All right, we dialed it back, and we are going to September 14th, 1997. Winston-Salem, North Carolina, better off known as Horseman Country. It's Fall Brawl 97. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Woo!
And, you know, we talk about the Horsemen. The big main event here is the Horsemen versus the NWO. We'll talk about the main event in details, but just a little background. We're coming off of Arn Anderson's big retirement and the subsequent parody by the NWO of the retirement and Arn giving his spot, not just a spot on the Horsemen, but his spot to Curt Hennig. And that's what stems this whole War Games that's going to be coming up later tonight. But you're right. We've got a hell of a card to talk about. There are a lot of great matches on here. I think overall this was fantastic. I enjoyed this show quite a bit. You've got Tony Schiavone, Bobby Heenan, Mike Tenay at times, and Larry Zbyszko calling the matches, which is the best commentary team that WCW ever had, in my opinion. Thoughts on that, Nick?
I was going to say they nailed it with the broadcasters, but you left off one guy. Mean Gene is backstage, so they got it absolutely perfect. You got Schiavone, Heenan, Tenay, Zbyszko, and Mean Gene. So there's no Bischoff screaming on there. So you got this is in the trenches of the Monday Night Wars, and this is a stellar card. It's a really good show, and they brought out the best for it.
And they start off hot. You've got the Cruiserweight Championship. They tend to start off with the Cruiserweights because their matches are just so outstanding. You've got Jericho and Eddie Guerrero. Chris Jericho taking on Eddie Guerrero for the title. I think this was a great match. Eddie Guerrero comes out, and I don't know if you noticed this, Nick, but they kind of messed up a little bit, and they keyed him as Harlem Heat. So as Eddie's walking to the ring, you see Harlem Heat appear briefly underneath him. Which I thought was hilarious.
I did catch that.
Excuse me. But this match, for a cruiserweight match, what stood out most to me is this had a lot of mat wrestling. You're used to the cruiserweights going to the top rope, flying here, there, and everywhere. But Jericho and Guerrero are on the mat most of the time through this match.
And I was just going to segue off what you just said there, CZ. They're wrestling their cruiserweights by weight, their cruiserweights by title. But this felt more like a standard wrestling match between two big guys. You know, it wasn't just the flying around. Good mat wrestling, and there a lot of slams and power slams. Unconventional, usually, for a Lucha Libre cruiserweight style match. So, these guys were wrestling. This match kind of foreshadowed how they would wrestle in the future in WWE, if you think about it. That's kind of what I really I had forgotten all about this match. I loved this match, every part of it. But I'm like, these guys are kind of giving us the preview of what their next step was going to be in WWF. And that's the case here. I had a great opener.
Longer match for an opener. They went a little over 17 minutes.
Yeah.
Didn't feel long.
No, it didn't. There wasn't a lot of downtime in this match. If I had to go back and watch it, I think it was probably like a 12-minute match, but it's a 17-minute match. Jericho comes in as the champion, but Eddie Guerrero wins the title and ends the one-month reign of the Lionheart, Chris Jericho.
This was they couldn't have started the show off any better. You know, opening matches, they say, set the tone for the entire event. And this one is no exception. They did a great job. It set the pace for everything. You know, you had I believe this was a 6 or 7 match card, Nick. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Eight matches.
Okay. So I was a little short. But still, you know, longer matches. People were they were given the reins to go. I think there's only one really short match, and we'll get to that a little later. But no, you couldn't have asked for a better opener than this. If you want a good example of how to start a pay-per-view, go back and watch Fall Brawl 97. Watch the opening match with Jericho and Eddie Guerrero, because these are two legends in the business, in my opinion. You've got one Hall of Famer, the late, great Eddie Guerrero. You've got a first ballot Hall of Famer, in my opinion, in Chris Jericho. And they won't let you down if you go back and watch this match.
No, it holds up over time. I mean, match in 97 between two, at the time, established wrestlers. They hadn't got to their greatness yet. This one's a good one. It ages well. 17-19, Eddie Guerrero gets the decision. Now, I'm going to tell you what, whether it's 1997 CZ or if it's 2022, one thing that doesn't change in wrestling is bad acting. And after this match, we go backstage where we see a WCW intern plugging WCWWrestling.com, doing a quote-unquote interview with Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah.
It is so bad. You can tell the intern has his lines written out on the computer, and he can't even get them straight. Jarrett can see the kid is drowning, disses on the kid, and, like, carries the segment. But I got a chuckle at him. Like, this is horrible.
I didn't have that in mind. I had forgotten about that, but you bring it up. I remember it was bad.
You
know, for such a great pay-per-view.
Mr. Jarrett, you're fighting Dean Malenko. What are your thoughts? It's like, oh, man, it was bad. It was awful. But I started. It caught my attention. And it's the perfect segue into our second contest, which features Harlem Heat, Booker T, and Stevie Ray with Miss Jacqueline. They are taking on the Steiner brothers, Scott and Rick, with Ted DiBiase. And I start on here. This is a Mount Rushmore tag team matchup between our between our prospective Mount Rushmores.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I mean, I had Harlem Heat on mine. You had the Steiner brothers on yours. Both teams on our respective lists were honorable mentions, at least, if not on the Mount Rushmore. So this is you have two tag team Mount Rushmore teams here. You're not in for a bad match at all. This is going to be a good one.
And you know what? It was. I'm not sure if either Steiner could have passed a piss test on the way to the ring, but I digress. Booker T and Stevie Ray look like monsters in this match, and so do the Steiners. So every high-impact move really hits different. I don't know how many head-to-head matches they had in their time there in WCW and beyond, but I could watch these two teams wrestle all day. Match goes just a little shy, 12 minutes. I thought it was a good follow-up to the opener. I also love Scott Steiner's diamond-studded workout belt. Where do you get one of those? Is it like, is it kind of make your own? Is it Hobby Lobby? Is it, you know, I got to go to Joanne Fabric? What do I got to do there?
Well, if asked Bruce Pritchard, you'd go to Belts R Us.
What did you think about this match?
You know,
I know it was right in your wheelhouse.
I agree. This was a great follow up to the main to the opener. I love the fact you've got a buzz from the crowd. They're not booing you. If you're sitting at home and you're watching, it sounds almost like they're booing. And Shivani points it out. They are barking in honor of Rick Steiner. The hoo, 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 hoo. It is fantastic. The crowd is really into it. Obviously behind the Steiners here. Overall, I think this was a great match. And, you know, another one that didn't feel like it went 12 minutes. This was a longer match, but we're going to say that a lot about this card that felt like it was paced really well.
Yeah. There really wasn't anything egregious on match times here as we wrap up the second match of the show. The Steiner brothers defeat Harlem Heat at 11:44. We've got two good contests. We're a half hour in. This crowd is hot. I love going back and reading the old signs. And I love going back and just look at the crowd. It's engaged. 97, not a lot of cell phones around. Nobody's on their phone. You know, people will have cameras taking pictures, but it's just a different place and different time. And it definitely is a different place and different time as we get into match three here. We have the WCW World Television Championship on the line. The challenger, Ultimo Dragon, my personal fave, Lucha, taking on the champ, Das Wonder Kid, Alex Wright. If there's one thing I want to see in life, is CZ doing the Alex Wright dance.
Well, stop over, bring your camera, and we'll put it on Twitter. I'll do it. I'll get it done.
Oh, man. I don't want to video record it. I just want somebody else to do it.
Maybe we can get our good friend, the podcast Tribal Chief DJ, to do it, to record it for us.
Maybe, you know.
I love it. It's silly. I will definitely do that for you. I want to point out this is the only other title match. There were two title matches on this card. You don't see a tag team title match here. You don't see the world title. The world champion is not even in the building. And that would be Hulk Hogan at this time. So very, very light on championship matches, but it's not a bad thing. This match is good too. This is another long match that, you know, the pacing is done really well. They went 18:43. Great match. You've got Alex Wright as the TV champion, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
He is the television champ. Das Wonder Kid, yep.
You know, you see a lot of, you do see some lucha moves from the Ultimo Dragon. You know, you get the acai moonsault to the outside. You do a sunset flip into a power bomb. The dragon gets a near fall on, but for the most part, Alex Wright is doing a great job of keeping him grounded. You're not seeing a lot of high flying, but when the dragon does, the big thing, and the commentators point this out, it seems like Alex Wright has a counter for it almost every time.
Alex Wright really works well battling the cruiserweight type of wrestlers because he was bigger than those guys. So the impact moves really, really paid dividends, I thought. Like, he's decidedly bigger and taller than Ultimo Dragon. And I think that, you know, styles create fights. You hear that a lot. And even though we're talking about Alex Wright probably more than most people would in September of 2022, this is a decent match. I mean, it's a decent pay-per-view. Hey, look, the world champ's not there, and there's only two title matches on the card. The undercard's got to deliver, right?
Yeah.
And your main event's not even for the title, but it is a war game, it's a special match. So the undercard had to deliver, and even though this is the second longest match of the show, the champ Alex Wright retains over Ultimo Dragon at 18:43. I thought it could have trimmed a few minutes off this match, but if that's my only complaint with it, it's a solid match. You won't regret it going back and watching.
And yeah, I'll go out on a limb here. I will say that Alex Wright is one of the most underrated wrestlers to come out of WCW. And you don't see him after WCW, at least not on the mainstream, but I think he had a lot of skill, a lot of talent, and was very underrated for his time on the mainstream of wrestling.
Could always be over as a heel. He had the look. He had the accent, right? Had the body. Had the moves. He had the dance. I mean, he was over. I just don't know. I just don't know what happened. And regardless, this is a championship title defense for Alex Wright as he beats Ultimo Dragon. We go so, now. Oh, go ahead.
I think you and I were on the same page here. From this match, we go backstage with Mean Gene. You see the NWO storm past him. And this is the underlying story for the whole night here. When Gene catches up with the NWO after they pass by a second time, we see Kurt Hennig, one of the four men to be in War Games tonight, part of the Horsemen, lying on the ground like the NWO attacked him and practically took him out. So the underlying question for the rest of the night, is Kurt Hennig going to be able to wrestle in the main event?
Yeah, that's the storyline here. Kurt Hennig gets jumped. Now it seems that the NWO gained the upper hand because it's the Four Horsemen. It's Flair, it's Benoit, it's McMichael, and it's Hennig. So now they're down to three. Arn Anderson can't fill that spot. So there's a little story to tell here. There's a little bit of turmoil as the 4-on-4 War Games match is now suddenly down to 4-on-3.
Yeah, so a lot of controversy. Big question mark on how the Horsemen are going to fare against the NWO. And, I mean, we'll talk a little bit about this later, but this is not the top name NWO. But still, you're down a man. Anytime you have that kind of disadvantage, you know, you're going to be looked at as the underdog. You're going to be asking the question, can they survive? Can they make this work?
And they do. We find out later they do. But the seeds have been planted, and that promo is cut, or that backstage altercation is cut. There's turmoil. The announcers, what are we going to do? And we are on our fourth match of the night, and we have JEFFJARRET, Jeff Jarrett with the lovely Deborah McMichael. Jeff has stolen her away from Steve Mongo McMichael. They are taking on the Iceman, the man of 1,000 holds, Dean Malenko.
And I want to point out a couple things here. So this match, first and foremost, the winner goes on to face Mongo at event for the U.S. title. But the big thing I want to point out, 1997, Dean Malenko, a lot of focus. We just had the PWI 500 come out this last week. Dean Malenko is number one on the PWI 500 in 1997. So this is really his year, and you can tell in this match alone, let alone any other match he's had throughout 97.
Yeah, this was my favorite match on the card. I really like work. I like watching Jarrett work. He's a good worker. Growing up watching Nitro, I always loved watching Dean Malenko. I love the Texas Cloverleaf. That'd be my finisher, if I ever happened to be a wrestler, which I think those days have passed. But yeah, this is Dean Malenko, was the number one wrestler in 97. Think about that. And it's nothing to scoff or laugh at. This guy is pound for pound the best wrestler in the world, maybe at that point.
Yeah, I agree. And he's always been one of those names that you have to look at as, well, this guy really has the potential to be a top guy anywhere he goes. His time in WWE was, I think, very short-lived. I thought he could have done a lot more, but he did go on to do a lot more backstage. And that was a testament to how good of a wrestler and how good of a teacher he is, I think. So a lot can be said about Dean Malenko and how just overall great he is as a competitor and as an overall wrestling personality, in my opinion.
For sure. Kids, go back and watch this match. Good mat-based wrestling counters. Jarrett does lock in the figure four on Malenko. Gets him to tap just under 15 minutes at 14:53. So we're halfway through the card, if you're looking at match-wise. And I had a note here. What do you think about how they do the double ring for the fall brawl and the seating? I think they do it about as good as they can. They rotate the matches, and I think that's good. I think it's awesome. I love seeing the two-ring thing out there.
I agree. I think the setup is really well done. When we get to the main event, I love the War Games cage. I want to take some time after we discuss the main event and talk, do a kind of comparison, just a brief one, something we can expand on later between WCW's War Game cage and WWE's. But this whole setup is great. You can also compare it to another event with multiple rings in WCW, their World War III event, where they had three rings.
Correct.
But overall, the setup was fantastic. You'd alternate between the rings. I thought that was great. It adds a new dynamic that you don't see every day.
No,
Nick, I think we need to take a time out here and pay dues to some of our sponsors real quick, though, before we go on. So I'm going to hand things over to our friend Joe the Show Winkle of the Educated Ignorance Podcast. Take it away, Mr. Winkle.
Make sure you tune in to More Frequency Take on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Twitch each Sunday during the football season from 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time to 4FantasySake.com/QC on Twitter, or you can send them an email at 4FantasySakeQC@gmail.com.
And I apologize. I think we had a little bit of an audio issue with that promo. So we'll hit it again here before too long, but let's go back into what we were talking about, Nick, okay?
Yeah, let's talk about this tag match real quick, and then we'll hit that promo if that's okay. We have a Haas tag team match. We have the Faces of Fear, Meng and Barbarian versus Wrath and Mortis.
Nick, Wrath, I got to ask you going into this, who better than Mortis?
Well, Mortis. Nobody better than Mortis.
Indeed. Mortis, the late, great Chris Kanyon, before he took on the Chris Kanyon gimmick. But you're right. This match is just a barn burner. These two teams hit each other with everything, including the kitchen sink.
Yeah, four big dudes going at it. Wrath, the former Atom Bomb, if you're a WWF fan. This would be like...
The future Brian Clark of Chronic.
That's right. So, four guys just beating the crap out of each other in a tag match. And the Beast of... I'll tell you what, Meng and Barbarian are both older here. And in 1997, can still go.
Yeah.
I think in 2022, both those guys could probably still go. I'm not doubting them at all. Those guys are legit tough.
And you watch this match, and Meng gets hit with at least one, if not several, clotheslines that he just shakes off. Like, he does not take he is all business. He's going to hit you hard, and if you hit him back, he's going to take it and hit you back again, twice as hard.
Again, a match that was like the perfect length. It was a good tag match between two teams of guys just banging on each other. Weren't a lot of high risk, high flying moves. The crowd seemed to enjoy it. Wrath and Mortis get the win at 12:22 over the Faces of Fear. I completely forgot about this match when going back and reviewing this show, the card. I'm like, I thought for sure the Faces of Fear won this match, but I completely forgot about Wrath and Mortis winning this match. I guess that's one of the good things of going back and watching these shows again.
Yeah, even if it's a 25-year-old show, sometimes you can still be surprised.
Oh, I try to be surprised as much as possible. I've seen parts of this show before, but I guess I forgot that match. And now that we got through that match, that tag match, do you want to pay the bills again?
Yeah, let's try that one more time. And again, I apologize here. Not sure why the volume was turned down, but Mr. Joey Winky, go ahead and take it away for us.
Make sure you tune into For Frequency's Sake on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Twitch each Sunday during the football season from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. The boys from For Fantasy's Sake will be bringing the fire fantasy football takes, updating you on the week's rankings and injuries, and getting you ready for your fantasy football matchups each and every week. The show is interactive, so be sure to send your questions. You can find them at For Frequency's Sake on Facebook, at FFSQC on Twitter, or you can send them an email at forfantasysakeqc@gmail.com.
And you can catch Joe Winkle, the Joe the Show, on his Educated Ignorance podcast, but our For Fantasy's Sake team, every Sunday, 10 a.m. to 11:30, our Tribal Chief DJ, one of the three faces of fear, in that podcast, bringing you every fantasy football tidbit that you need each and every week.
DJ and the gang on top of it. Did you make the Faces of Fear reference? That's a pretty good reference.
I did.
That's good. Way to wrap that into the match we just talked about. Wow, man. It's like you worked in the business before.
You would be surprised, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would, right?
So after the tag match, we go backstage again with Mean Gene. He is with the three remaining horsemen. The thing that I have written down here is none of the horsemen are talking about Kurt Hennig. Whenever Gene asks them, is he going to be able to compete? They just move right on. They steamroll over him, and they're like, we're the horsemen. We're going to dominate. Nick, what did you think of this promo? Or this interview, I should say.
I was worried about Flair's blood pressure first and foremost. He was really up in arms in this promo. I thought it was masterful of them to ignore it. They're not going to acknowledge it. You know, that's them telling me, hey, they've moved on. They know they got to go 3-on-4, and they're not going to use it as an excuse. The horsemen aren't, in this case, going to be using it as an excuse. Hey, they're in horseman country. You know, they're not going to let this take away from them getting their hands on the NWO and getting back for what they said did with Arn Anderson. So I liked the promo personally. I thought it was fine.
Yeah, I think it was well put together. Like I said, I just had it in my notes to use an insider term. They were no selling the fact that Kurt Hennig was injured, but I think it worked really well.
Yeah, I think it did too. And it does work, and you'll see why later on.
And, you know, we go here from one hoss fight to another, in all honesty. You've got two big men coming into the ring on the shortest match of the card. You've got the Giant against Scott Flash Norton. This match goes 5:27. One thing that I have in my notes, Nick, I was very surprised the Giant didn't come out to any music when he entered the ring.
Now, I don't know if he did or didn't, since, you know, this is kind of WWE's gotten their hands on things. So I don't know if that was what originally happened or not.
That's fair. I mean, you look at some of the other competitors, like Jericho will sometimes, because they can't use.
Right. Jericho came out to the Break the Walls Down music on this pay-per-view in the opener against Eddie Guerrero.
But it really wouldn't be appropriate for the WWE to edit in, well, it's the big show, for the Giant to come to the ring.
Right, right. So that might be why. I don't know, but that's something to consider. I don't know if that's the answer, though.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I didn't even think about that. So thank you for mentioning that. But yeah, that was the big thing that stood out at the beginning, is you don't hear any music for the Giant. And it could very well be a copyright issue, and the WWE just didn't have anything to replace it.
Very much so. I know if I worked in that production department, everybody would have the correct music, okay? When possible. Yeah. And if they couldn't have the correct music, I would find the closest thing to it.
No, and I think that's fair. I think that's how it should be. I mean, obviously, copyright. You can't have Hulk Hogan coming out to Voodoo Child. that's going to be an expensive copyright to put on a network where anybody can watch any show anytime. But they should have done, they should have made an effort to, if not get the copyright for the music for the wrestlers of WCW, at least put a placeholder in when they could.
Right.
This match, though, let's talk about the match. This was, I was impressed with Scott Norton in this match because at one point you see him pick up the 450-pound giant and drop him to the mat. That was, you know, he hits the stun gun on the rope. He picks him up for a slam. Norton is a powerhouse here.
Yeah, Norton is a powerhouse. And the joke is, you know, hey, that'd be bigger in Japan. Well, he was. He was huge in Japan. Scott Norton was beloved over there. Gets a good match here. This is late in Scott Norton's career, later. Both these guys took some good spots in this match. I know there's a clothesline over the top rope to the outside.
Yeah.
And there was a good tumble there. Perfect length for this match. This did not need to be any longer. Perfect to have two guys go out there and beat the crap out of each other for nearly 5.5 minutes. I thought it was a great match, and it was good. It was putting it in this spot for a reason, and it's, you know, to segue between the tag match and the next tag match. If you throw a singles match in there, it just makes sense. And I thought it was a good big guy match for sure.
And then we just jump right into the next match here. You've got the master of the diamond cutter, Diamond Dallas Page, teaming with Lex Luger, going against Scott Hall and, the Macho Man. Both repping the NWO.
Hey, yo.
Is it time for another survey?
It is time for another survey. This match could have been DDP and Scott Hall versus Luger and Savage. Doesn't it seem like these four guys are always involved in tag matches with each other or different partners?
A lot of times, yeah.
So, like, okay, I'm watching the guys come out, and I'm like, okay, so they're working face this time. Like, I was entertained by it. It wasn't a crap match. It's a no DQ match. But, you know, it could have been DDP and Savage. You could have said DDP and Savage into Luger and Hall, and I would have believed you. It just seems
Let
like
me ask
these
you
four
this.
Guys are always interchangeable.
I agree. I think they are, and it's a testament to how great of workers they are too.
Oh, for sure. I'm not ripping it. It's a good match. It's a good match. I'm not dissing on it one bit.
Refresh my memory, Nick. When was the big feud between Savage and DDP? Was it 97?
I think this is the midst of it.
Okay, because I know this is after. I want to put a pin on this. Because sometime next year, I want us to go back and talk about the only pay-per-view that has ever come to the Moline, Illinois. And that is the Great American Bash of this year, of 97. I think that is worth talking about at some point. Because it's got some local flair for you and I.
Oh, for
I don't
sure.
know if you were
yeah,
at
well,
that show.
No, I didn't make it to that show, but I had several friends who were.
I was in the nosebleeds for that show. That was fun, and that was, for those of you listening, and to give you just a little teaser, the main event was Savage versus DDP in a Moline street fight.
Oh, man, those Moline street fights are the dreaded ones. They're the worst ones.
They are. I mean, the people of Moline even get involved in those, and, you know, there's frying pans and baking sheets and stop signs and blood. It's crazy.
I wish I could have went to that show. I honestly do.
I'll tell you, I don't have a lot of memories of that show. I know I was there, but I don't think it was as memorable for me because I was sitting way up at the top of at that time, the Mark of the Quad Cities.
Sure, sure.
Or as the commentator said, the Mark of the Quad.
The Mark of the Quad.
Regardless
of the people, it's DDP and Luger versus Savage and Hall. DDP in the midst of his feud with Savage, Miss Elizabeth is siding with the NWO here of Savage and Hall.
One of the things that I have in my notes is that Savage and Hall, essentially are playing ping pong with Paige between the two rings.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you could say that. I think that's a fair assumption.
I'm pretty sure they were supposed to be in ring one. At one point, Scott Hall makes his way over to ring two, and him and Savage just take turns throwing DDP from one ring to the other.
Well, the match finishes in ring two, but you're right. There was a lot of back and forth between the two rings. Maybe they said, hey, nobody else has done it. Let's do it.
That's probably the case. But I love the finish of this match because it sets up another feud that we're going to come into that we'll probably see when we talk about Halloween Havoc 97 next month. There's a teaser for you. Because Larry Zbysko, sitting at the commentary desk, gets fed up, throws his headset down, and storms down to the ring to distract Scott Hall and give the win to Paige and Luger.
Yes, the living legend Larry Zbysko has had enough of the NWO and their hijinks, and he's going to go down there to give Scott Hall a piece of his mind. He gets in the ring or on the apron, does his thing, and it's enough for Luger rolls up Hall, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yeah, Luger, who had been stomped down in between the two rings.
That's right.
Crawls
that's
his
right.
way out from the rings and gets the roll up on Scott Hall. And Larry Zbysko, our living legend, he's the one who counts the pinfall because Scott Hall blatantly takes out two referees.
And Larry Zbysko is just, he ain't taking that crap anymore.
No.
And so he was sick of it and sick of the NWO, and he went and did something about it.
And, you know, after this match, we go to Mean Gene for a promo on the hotline. That was Mean Gene's baby. We get a promo for Halloween Havoc 97.
Besides that hotline, I've got a new tagline for our podcast. Kids, please get parents' permission before listening.
Yes. We will not pull punches. Get your parents' permission. And then come back and listen to us all you want.
And we won't charge you $1.99 a minute. Not at all.
That would get expensive for us since we tend to go over an hour sometimes.
I would honestly like to know, not to get off topic here, I would honestly like to know what the wrestling companies made off people calling those hotlines. Because that was different place in time. No dirt sheets then.
No internet.
In the mail. It wasn't instantaneous.
The internet is only just coming into its existence, if it's even a thing at this point. So how else are you going to get your wrestling news? And on that, how else are you going to get your fantasy football news other than listening to For Fantasy's Sake? I'm going to send things back over to Joe Wingle to talk about our websites, okay?
In addition to bringing fire on the mic, the team at For Frequency's Sake is still bringing it online as well. Check out ForFantasySakeQC.com this season for college DFS, Survivor League, and betting advice each and every week of this football season. Again, that is ForFantasySakeQC.com for college DFS, Survivor League, and betting advice each week during the football season.
Thank you, Joe the Show Winkle. Again, you can find him on the Educated Ignorance podcast on the For Frequency's Sake podcast network. Nick, we're here. It's time. Get Michael Buffer ready because we need him to intro us here, okay?
Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready?
I love that big fight feel, that big fight voice of Michael Buffer. And it's time for the War Games match. I wish they still called it the Match Beyond. I miss that tagline.
I can agree with that. That was a great tagline. I have always been a fan of War Games. I loved the fact that Hunter brought it back to the WWE in NXT. Not so sure how I feel about the cage not having a top on it in WWE. But at the same time, it's a different era, different product. and this brings some new dimensions to it with what they do it. But we're not in 2022. We're in 1997 right now. The cage comes down, raining pyro from all sides. And Nick, I think we need to go over the rules of the War Games match. Hit us with those.
Oh my goodness. There are seven periods to the match, if I'm mistaken. The match starts out with a 5-minute period of a one-on-one match. After that 5-on-5 period, one team from the coin toss is allowed the advantage. Is it for 3 minutes or 5 minutes?
2 minutes, actually.
2 minutes, I'm sorry. 2 minutes. And that rotates until all eight participants of the War Games match are in the contest. There can't be a decision until all eight men are in, and then that's quote-unquote when the match beyond starts.
And here's the thing. Pinfalls
did I,
do
did
not
I, Did I hit that good? That was all off the top of my head.
That was 100% right on, Nick. The only addition I have, no pinfalls in this matchup. The only way to win is for the other team to say they give up or surrender.
Yep. That's usually – that was the case on this one. You're right.
So this match starts off with Buff Bagwell going up against Chris Benoit. A lot of controversy surrounding Benoit in his later life. We're not going to talk about that. We're going to remember him for the times he was a great wrestler and just completely discard what happened. Not to poo-poo on what happened. Tragic event. We're just not going to talk about it.
No, we're not. And he's a terrific worker at this point in the game in 97. He and Buff Bagwell start off the 5-minute period. You'd think Benoit would be just beating the crap out of Bagwell, but after the 5 minutes, Bagwell's got a big old poop-eating grin on his face, and he's posing for the camera. So it's clear that the NWO has won the first period.
And I think before we get any further, we need to go over who's on the teams here.
Yeah, so we probably should, right?
B-squad. Yeah. You've got the B-squad of the NWO.
You say it's the B-squad, but it all makes sense. The NWO has Buff Bagwell, Kevin Nash, Six, and Conan. But those were the four guys in the promo that ripped on Arn Anderson. So it makes sense.
That's why it was. It absolutely makes sense. But as far as the NWO goes, your main guys were Hall, Hogan, and Nash. So for all intents and purposes, this is the B-squad. But there's a really good reason why. It all makes sense because the parody promo when Arn Anderson gave up his spot to Kurt Hennig, this was the four NWO members who made fun of that moment, and that just pissed everybody in the Horsemen off.
And didn't Kevin Nash say he'd give up his liver spots?
Liver spots, dog spot. There were a handful of other different spots.
Well, the NWO was Buff Bagwell, Kevin Nash, Six, and Conan. The Four Horsemen, this installment, Chris Benoit, Steve McMichael, woo-woo, Ric Flair, and then the spot that was given by Arn Anderson, his spot to Kurt Hennig, and Hennig was jumped halfway through the show backstage.
So you've still got the question of whether Hennig is going to be able to make it out for the match as we go into this, but the Horsemen are going to charge on like nothing happened, because that's who they are. The Horsemen are just gonna do their thing and run wild on whoever they can. After that first 5-minute period, the coin flip goes to the NWO.
New World Order.
Now, I want to point out that during the match, the fans are hot, but they're not hot for anyone in the match. The chants you hear are, "We want Sting." Now, this is during the crow period of Sting, when he's not talking and is just hanging up in the rafters. So Hulk Hogan and Sting both noticeable by their absence on this pay-per-view. Want to point that out.
That's right. This is when Sting is not sure if he's going to help out, or he's kind of turned his back on WCW because they kind of turned his back on him in a sense, storyline-wise. So
yeah, this stems back to... It stems back to the previous year's War Games when you had the fake sting on the NWO.
That's right. I don't want to get off this match by any means, but for not having your world champion, Hulk Hogan, for not having your biggest face, Sting, and for not having the best incarnation of the NWO together, it's still a pretty darn good pay-per-view for WCW. It's a pretty darn good pay-per-view, and it's a WCW pay-per-view that was good. So, yeah, this is...
And I said the B-team of the NWO. That is in jest. Everyone in this match is a solid worker and does a great job in this match.
And you know what? You want to say that? This isn't the best incarnation of the Four Horsemen by any means. But at the same time, it's still the Four Horsemen. Maybe not the best by name, but at the time, it worked great with the NWO. And we have the NWO winning the coin toss, so Conan is in for the 2-on-1 advantage on Benoit. And credit to Benoit, he holds his own in those 5 minutes. And after that 5 minutes, Mongo McMichael comes in, and it's hard seeing Mongo like this, the big guy you remember with the long ponytail, and I believe Lou Gehrig's disease is really taking its toll on Mongo today, and he doesn't look. He's nearly unrecognizable now. I just feel bad watching that, but he was a hoss for sure, and he is. Hey, you also didn't have the U.S. heavyweight champion defending their belt on the show,
which that is Mongo, correct?
That's Mongo. So two championship matches, no Hogan, no Sting, as you're calling it, the B team of the NWO. It's not even the best Four Horsemen incarnation, but it is at Horseman Country. So it's going to work, right?
Right. And, you know, you said that about Steve Mongo McMichael. Definitely card subject to change. We send our thoughts and prayers to Mongo out to him and his family.
But yes, let's remember Mongo here in a good light. Mongo is still with us. In the match, he is laying waste to Conan. And 100%. What I mean by running away, I don't think Conan's gotten up off the mat in like the last, for 2.5 minute period as Mongo just lays waste to him.
Absolutely. Mongo, this is just this big powerhouse who lays waste to pretty much anyone he gets in the ring with. You know, a lot of people were hesitant on Mongo. I thought he really held his own during his time in the ring. You know, you see a lot of people that step off the football field and come into the wrestling ring that make it really big. You see some people that fall flat. And then you've got Mongo, who's just kind of in between. He doesn't make it to that next level where he's in the main event, but he definitely holds his own stepping off of the football field, coming into the wrestling world.
It's a good point you make there, CZ, and I want to add to that. He was also with people who were smart and knew how to work, talking about the Horsemen. So he was always – I'm not saying he did a great job on his own. He transitioned real well. But he was always with the Horsemen, never really put in a position to fail. And that was smart on WCW's part, bringing in a football player to do that. And Mongo, he'll be remembered always as a Four Horseman. He's the only Four Horseman in history to win a Super Bowl as well. Think about that.
And didn't he spend his entire wrestling career with the Horsemen?
I believe he did.
Who else can say that?
Flair?
Other than Flair. Other than Flair.
Arn Anderson?
To an extent. If you consider his in-ring career, absolutely Arn Anderson. So three people out of how many different Horsemen did we go through?
Yeah. How many people were horsemen their whole career? That's a great trivia question.
So after the next 2 minute period, when the NWO has their 3-on-2 advantage, Six comes in. They're saving the big dog. They're saving Kevin Nash for last. They're saving Ric Flair for seemingly last at this point. But Six comes in. And then at this point, when Six comes in the ring right around this time, you have Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig, coming down to ringside. He's got his arm in a sling. Him and Flair have a little conversation. Flair checks over the sling, but it looks like Kurt Hennig is going to be good to go, sling or not. He's going to enter the ring here later on.
Hennig shows up. He's a gamer. He was getting taken care of. I think maybe the Horsemen had banked on him not being there, but happy to see him, or at least Flair was happy to see him. I'm sure Mongo and Benoit were too, being inside getting punished. But we are down. You know, we're 3-on-3 mode here. Big Sex is over there. Big Sexy Kevin Nash waiting to come in and clean house. Smart move by the NWO, having Nash back cleanup come in last. Big guy with the most rest. I like it. And then you have Hennig out there waiting after Nash goes in. So
yeah,
Hennig has 2 minutes to watch the Horsemen at a disadvantage, and it really builds the storyline. If you know, is Hennig going to be able to get in there and wrestle as he was jumped earlier? His arm's in a sling. Could be a broken arm. Could be a broken collarbone. Nobody knows.
And that 2 minute period ends. Hennig comes in. He rips off the sling that his arm is in, and he's got two pairs of handcuffs. He's good to go. His arm is good. He's ready to rumble. But that's when the turn happens, ladies and gentlemen. One of my favorite turns of all time in any wrestling organization. Kurt Hennig takes the handcuffs and he lays waste to the Horsemen.
Oh, how could he do this? How could he do this? In Horseman country, he's going to do this. And Tony Schiavone is there to lament with us all. Oh, I love it. I absolutely love this. I put handcuffs in wrestling never get old.
No. So Hennig takes the cuffs. The NWO takes the cuffs. They tie up Benoit on one side. They tie up Mongo on the other. And they just begin to beat the holy crap out of every single Horseman. 5-on-3, Kurt Hennig now part of the NWO, and probably the worst part for anyone in Horseman country, Hennig takes Flair, pulls him in between the door and the post of the cage, and Kevin Nash says, if you guys don't surrender, we're gonna cave his head in. So Mongo says, this has got to stop, we surrender. And what does Hennig do? Smashes Flair's head in anyway.
Absolutely. Yeah, you got to seal the full turn, and Hennig did it. We stopped, but I'm still going to smash his head in. Yeah, the Hennig turn is something beautiful to watch unfold, especially when he gets in there with the handcuffs. The handcuffs are hidden in the sling. That's the moment right there, and that's when it sets in. Hey, the Horsemen aren't winning. You know, they're not winning in their hometown. If this was AEW, Tony would have the Horsemen winning this match somehow because it's in their hometown. But I digress. This one, it sets in. When Hennig rips off that swing and hands out the handcuffs, like, the Horsemen are not winning this match, and that's when it sets in.
Yeah. What a fantastic card this show was. You know, you've got the War Games match as the longest match on the card. They go 19 minutes, 37 seconds. I couldn't have booked this any better. For 1997, this was well played. And to not have your world champion, like you said, to not have your biggest baby face on the show, and only two title matches and minor titles at that, you couldn't have booked a better card.
No, and you're missing you're missing your two biggest stars. So with that all being said, you know, we did Slamboree 2000 last time knowing we were, it was going to get stinky and messy, but getting Fall Brawl 97 back was such a treat, and it was fun to watch these matches. A really good card. I know WCW gets buried in the ashes of time, but Fall Brawl 97, they had it going on, and I absolutely love the show. I know War Games match and War Games are your thing, and I, when you piped up with Fall Brawl 97, I knew exactly why, and it's definitely a fun show to review.
What do you think of the current incarnation of War Games? Because we have two when you think about it. You've got the NXT War Games, But you've also got AEW doing their Blood and Guts, which is essentially War Games with a different name.
I like the Blood and Guts version better because it's the two rings with the bigger cage. They could make the cage lower, but then you ruin the spot of possibly going up top. So I think the Blood and Guts version is better, although the open top cage doesn't bother me.
I completely agree with both of those statements. The Blood and Guts is more traditional War Games. You have the closed off cage. You've got a lot of spots where that can happen, but having the open top adds a lot of possibilities for what modern wrestlers do. I mean, you got to look at how many War Games was Adam Cole and the Undisputed Era in, and Cole would just take those horrendous dives off the top of the cage.
Right. And I mean, I guess I'd have to go back and watch every War Games match. But now in these type of matches, we as fans, not just me and you, but not me and you, but we as wrestling fans are so spoiled and expect the big spot, right?
Yeah.
When in actuality, a couple times where it's there and the big spot doesn't happen, it's okay. So, if I had my druthers, I would go with the Blood and Guts setup over the NXT War Games setup.
No, and I can agree with that. I like them both for what they are, but you've got a lot of tradition in the Blood and Guts because it feels more like what War Games should be and was back in its heyday in the WCW.
Yeah, it does have that feel. It really does. And the cage is supposed to be kind of flimsy. It's supposed to have some give to it, you know?
Yeah.
I guess Blood and Guts has kind of morphed into, it's got its take on Hell in the Cell too. So I would side with the Blood and Guts, but you can't tear apart the old War Games matches, man. Those were the backbone of that company and the NWA for years.
For sure. And I'm glad we got to talk about one. I'm anxious to go back in time and talk about others. There were some other great War Games matches, but that's for a later date and time. Nick, let's talk about what's coming up here in the next few weeks. I know we made the big announcement next week. We're talking to Merrick Brave. I'm excited. I think that's going to be a great sit down. That happens on the 26th of September. We will be recording with Merrick. That should post to you to your podcast listening platforms on the 27th. But here's the other big announcement. We are breaking format 2 weeks in a row. Nick, who are we talking to the next week in the beginning of October?
Well, the beginning of October, we will be sitting down and speaking with the wrestler known to many in the area as Crotch. Crotch has been a mainstay for SCW Pro for several years. He's also the head trainer for the Black and Brave Wrestling Academy. So we will be talking with Merrick Brave next week, who is also part of the Black and Brave Academy and the booker for SCW Pro. And then we will talk to Crotch the following week. Both will have their takes on the business, of course, but Chris or CZ and I obviously want to connect with them on a fan level, why they like wrestling, what they watch in wrestling, what they seek out when they're not, when they're on their own time watching something in wrestling. So yeah, we're going to break format. You know why? Because we can. It's card subject to change. Okay. Kids, make sure you get your parents' permission before downloading and listening.
Absolutely, and that's going to put a bow on this week's episode. Two big interviews coming up. I will tell you the week after we interviewed Crotch. WWE has their big Extreme Rules Premium Live event. So we will give all the recap and reaction that we have from that event in a couple of weeks. But next week, the big sit-down with Merrick Brave. Looking forward to that. Nick, go ahead and take us out, my friend.
Hey, it's been real. It's been fun. And I hope it's been real fun. I'm speaking on behalf of CZ. This is the Honorable Nick Bull. We'll catch you here next week. Woo!